So how do you keep this sila that the Buddha spoke about? How do you keep the samadhi and the panya? How do you keep this in your daily life, I ask you? Well, I can tell you how we keep it. I live in a monastery. It's very helpful. And I have spiritual companions. It's everything. And I think about the Buddha all day long because we have so many reminders here. And we remind each other. We're like mirrors. So I think that in lay life is much harder. But what I've learned to do over this is 36 years now as a nun, I've learned to try to practice that in everyday life so that the temple is in my heart. It's not a place. It's very skillful what you're doing now, that you're all gathered together and you do probably have a daily practice and you are quite a tight-knit community, which is beautiful to see. But there are probably other steps that are needed. So I want to focus on the middle aspect. The Buddha taught sila, samadhi, panya. And this samadhi aspect, many people pick it up as meditation. So meditation is an all-day-long practice. In the term of samadhi, it's a concentration, but we really have to look at the way we balance effort. Effort has to be balanced, and our attention has to be balanced. Our mindfulness has to be powerful. It's not about power, but it's about quality. And with quality, with faith, with generosity to the moment, we rise up to really pay attention. Pay. We're not paying with money. We're paying with presence. So in English, the word is to pay attention, but we're giving attention. We're offering our powerful, our total commitment, presence, and attention to this, to being here now. What is the world doing with that attention? Think about daily life for you. What is your daily life? Now, there's probably a lot of distraction. We get a lot of distraction here. Here in the monastery, we get distracted all the time. We have dear and beautiful distractions, but we're still trying to bring our presence to that distraction. We have groundhogs that make holes and tunnels and destroy a lot of things. And then we get more distracted because we worry. But we bring our attention to what we have to do to help solve that and be in the moment. And we have the distractions of people coming and going and of taking care of the place, but we try to bring mindfulness and give our energy to that fully, moment by moment. With meditation, the practice is very private. Nobody knows what you're actually doing. But if we can be the Buddha witness in the present moment and be aware, am I present? Am I here? Where is the mind? This is really the exercise. Then I'm aware that that's distracting. So the awareness is constantly being referred to and brought into our practice. And we have to remember, this is practice. We might not be good at it, but we keep giving ourselves to it. And the habit of giving, offering, being generous to the moment, helps us to continue to concentrate, to gather all our attention and offer it up. Samadhi by itself means that we have offered to ourselves this authority, this ability to be present and to give our attention focused and fully on one thing. And that oneness, that simplification in the present moment is really what will draw our attention to the Dhamma, to reality, instead of all the other components of being present, which is mindfulness, gratitude, generosity, effort, seeing clearly, knowing what is present. The knowledge of what is present has to be streamlined into one point more and more. And then when we make that a habit, we can say that we are here, here and now. And we really know what is here, here and now. Rather than knowing the world, we start to know our own condition. And so our attention, instead of being on worldly things, is inward. What is the mind doing? Where is our focus? So if you press a button on your cell phone, it will turn the camera towards you and you take a selfie. So in present moment awareness, we're doing a selfie on the mind all the time. But we also have present moment awareness, so it's like a double mirror. We also are aware of our relationship to our environment. If we don't pay attention to what the senses are experiencing in some way, then smoke could come pouring out of something in your environment and you could be caught in a fire. So we have to be aware of the fire in the mind, but the fire, the potential fire around us. And this is how we put out the fire. The mind is pretty much lit up. And what we're trying to do is cool it. Back in the 60s, this was a big expression, cool it. Cool it. This, calm down. To put the fire out. So here, in the cooling down of the mind, we're trying to rev up our presence and increase and fully empower our attention to the state of the mind and to what we are aware of. Now, the simplification of mind means that our attention comes to what is held in the mind. It's very difficult to be aware of awareness itself, so we really pay attention to the quality of our breathing. To notice the arising and ceasing of that in the present moment all the time. You start with 1 moment, 5 moments, 10 moments, an hour. The concentration must be based on sila. Really, it's not just being a good person generally, but it's renunciation and the cultivation of virtue, being restrained and being able to give up what we want when it isn't harmless and when it isn't beneficial for our ability to simplify and fully offer our presence to this moment. The Buddha gives us the 5 precepts to start with. So if we are not able to follow those precepts, it's really important to acknowledge that and try again, rather than a sloppiness that is not going to help this empowerment of awareness and the clarity of it. So the other part of that is the wisdom factor, sila, samadhi, panya. Panya also has to be brought into this. And we start by noticing what is the quality of my presence, of this attention to the breath. Is it 5 seconds out of 60? Just see how much the mind is obsessing in thought. How much is the mind wavering? How much worry? Can we look at the kilesa? It's just like if you get dressed in the morning and you forget to tie your shoelaces, you're going to trip. So moment by moment, we have to be aware of the quality of our attention and repair. Ascend. When we're drooping, wake up. Wake up. Know that we're asleep. Know that we're not present. Know that we're dreaming. Know that the mind is upset, angry, boiling. Cool it. Keep bringing in whatever the Buddha has offered us as a tool into present moment awareness. And of course, mindfulness is being mindful. The mind is full of knowing what is happening within it. And then we can say, we are here. Yes. And it doesn't matter how much we miss, but it matters how much we're aware and the honesty with ourselves. Life is so complex. And if you have a family and children and partners and people living with you or people abusing your situation, then it becomes much harder. So we live here in a field of wholesomeness. When the mind is focusing on this kind of one-pointed practice, then the mind becomes very good at being silent and still and aware at one point, and mindfulness can get perfected, and you can experience a lot of bliss, a lot of beauty, a lot of joy, and then you get addicted to that because you can do that for longer and longer periods. With that addiction, there's attachment to having these euphoric states of mind. Now, this kind of happiness is a blameless one. And that is so important. To have blameless happiness is far superior to having happiness because we've eaten delicious food, or we've had sensual delights that are world-based, which are not wholesome in the sense that we're then attached to the sense realm, to bodily experiences, and we then develop more and more of a sense of being a person who has all these experiences. It doesn't help us to grow in wisdom. And if we're attached in that way to this blameless happiness, we can be transcendent, not attached to the world, but we get attached to this kind of mind state that is particularly joyful, peaceful, based on perfect conditions. So then we're not really cultivating the garden of the mind. We're just focusing on a certain kind of plant. And if that plant gets diseased, then your garden is finished. It's a bit like that with the replanting of the forests in BC. The monoculture forest is much more likely to burn down than the forest that has many kinds of tree. And so the mind that is able to cultivate this awareness with any kind of situation, whether somebody is praising you or someone is blaming you, your state of mind is blameless. And it may not be a joy of, oh, this is such a great mind state, but you're perfecting your wisdom, and the wisdom is not attaching to having conditions be a certain way. and not attaching to this sense of I am this person. But we're developing awareness of conditions, and we're present for whatever conditions are arising without attaching to things being a certain way. With that cultivation of a garden that is like solar power, you have nature on your side. You have the sun in your heart. You don't have to rely on the world being a certain way. Even if you're in a terrible situation and you're about to die, your awareness can still be cultivated, and then you will know that you are not your body, so that death will not be fearful. And we are attached to the world in such a way that we don't realize that attachment. And it's basically an attachment to I, me, and mine. My experience, my mind, myself, my happiness. So we can do the perfection of anatta, to let go I, me, and mine. So when the mind goes in a direction that is wholesome, and we let go the world, but we have to let go so that awareness begins to understand reality, and instead of working from a me and a mine, wanting things to be perfect so that you can have the perfect practice. Because as soon as you go back in the world, we can't deal with it. And at the end of the retreat, the mind is so deeply in itself that it's difficult, because you don't want to be in a situation where you have to function talking to people and going into shops and dealing with all that. So then you want the perfect conditions so that you can enjoy these transcendent mind states. But these transcendent mind states become an attachment. But the real freedom is not owning any of that, not wanting any of that. To free the mind from wanting even the joy, even if it's blameless, and we're not bothered if the garden were to disappear. We're not attached to any of it. So this non-attachment, the non-grasping, the non-habit is where the self is empty. There is no one wanting anything. And the non-wanting, that's the freedom. So concentration is like being able to water the plants so they grow big and they make you happy. But the cultivation of the path, the noble eightfold path, is the development of wisdom to its fullest. And that is the freedom from any world, not just this world. It's the freedom from birth itself. And it's the absolute purification. It's ethical purity, a moral purity. There is no one. There's just purity itself. Because that complete purification of the mind, we know that that is what we are. We are that purity. But we won't know it until it's absolute. And to know absolute purity is to want for nothing. There is nothing wrong with any of it. So we wouldn't need to go on retreat if we could practice like that. And that's why the development of insight is so helpful, because you don't have to flip to be looking inward with your cell phone. You would have a circular view all the time. There's no self to view at all. We don't look at the world, we don't look at the self. There's just pure presence. And the pure presence is not diminished by anything that happens outside of us or within, because the mind is completely at peace. the concentration practices, they arise and cease. They're impermanent. But Nibbana is unconditioned. So the realization of perfection is the realization of the unconditioned. And to know that these practices are conditioned, we have to understand that it's not the full path. Even though it's a blameless happiness, we can be joyful about that, but then we use that to develop the wisdom. Who is this self that has to go on retreat? We can learn, even in the world, to practice with conditions exactly as they are. If we take refuge in the unconditioned, then we take care of the mind to purify it so that it is able to be present for all conditions with a coolness, a peace, a balance, an equanimity. So these four sublime abidings that the Buddha teaches of loving kindness and an exalted kind of compassion, we perfect it little by little. And the same with the joy. It's a joy that is not disturbed because the world is crazy. That is the nature of the world. It just goes belly up. Even at the time of the Buddha, the world was going belly up. And there were times when he had to leave a community where he was teaching because they wouldn't listen to him. Imagine. And so he walked out because they wouldn't listen. And we went to a community where people were really doing the practice. It's just an example to us that you cannot change the world. It will always go belly up. It'll be good for a while, the forest will be there, and then it'll burn. That's the nature of the conditioned world, is to arise and cease, arise and disappear. It's impermanent. And if we think that we can perfect the world, then our thinking is flawed. And we have to realize that the world will never be perfect. This earth is also here now, and it might take a billion years, but it is imperfect. It will arise and fall. And we can protest as much as we want, but we can't change the nature of the world. But we can change our understanding of our nature. What is the nature of this being? The nature of this being is already perfect, but we don't know that. So if we perfect our wisdom, we can know that nature. But that's quite a leap. First, we have to perfect the sila, perfect the samadhi, but not stop at that. So the practice of concentrating the mind, habituating the mind to that blameless happiness of pure present moment awareness, and then turning that awareness to itself. That is the panya, is we turn that awareness to knowing its nature. And then the mind is not me or mine getting a particular mind state, but it's just the pure knowing of our own nature. There is no self there to know. There's just pure understanding of these noble truths. And then all these practices are left behind. It's like the raft has taken you to the farther shore. You don't pick up the raft to take it with you. You don't need it anymore. So even all these conventions that we use, we're not attached to them anymore. So we're just in pure presence. And equanimity is not disturbed. And there's no wanting for anything. So the practices develop wisdom. And the mind gets cool enough to turn awareness to knowing itself. Then you might not have euphoria, because there is nothing to have. Awareness is complete within itself. However, there is also unconditional compassion. We have a responsibility for the vehicle, to take care of the body, to help the forest grow, to take care of the earth. But the mind has done its work. We know our true nature, and we can die in complete peace.